Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. It's Ed Fallon here, your host, and we're broadcasting from the heart of America's heartland, the sweltering city of Des Moines, Iowa. We've got content important to you wherever you live. I think you'll find it interesting today. Underwriting provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan, local, and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Bumper music for this program provided by the Des Moines Irish Session. So later in the show, we'll be discussing climate change, of course, specifically the albedo. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. This is a new word for me, maybe for you as well. We'll also discuss details about a high-powered climate meeting last year at the White House between Trump and his honchos and oil companies and their honchos. We'll also discuss a new plague sweeping the country, loneliness. And I've got a bit of information to share with you regarding another failed anti-First Amendment Trump lawsuit. And still yet, another example of the failure of corporate welfare. All kinds of failure. So much failure going on here. I've also got to share some news from you from the Middle East about the Israeli government. Again, you're just basically flipping off international law. And so we must talk about the cyclosporiasis problem. Otherwise known as what? Raging diarrhea? Anyway, we'll talk about that and the source of the problem. Kathy will join me for that conversation. But otherwise, today it's just me and you folks, and here we go. I want to talk about the Trump speech last week, the election speech. You know, I listen to right-wing radio, so you don't have to. And last week, my jaw dropped when one of the two talking heads that have succeeded Rush Limbaugh, and they've been there for about 3 years now, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. Buck Sexton specifically raised, in response to Trump's speech on the election, raised exactly the same questions I have raised and will continue to raise. And now, this is fascinating to me because this says volumes about where things might be heading. But before we dig into that, and dig into it we shall, I want to play this clip from a PBS interview with Ty Cobb. Okay, so who's Ty Cobb? Not a baseball player. He's an attorney who served as the special counsel during Trump's first administration back in 2016. So Cobb's got a history with Trump. He's presumably no friend of the Democratic Party. Here's what he had to say in response to a question about Trump's July 16 speech on the security of America's elections.
Well, I think tonight's speech is intended to add the predicate that he needs to declare an emergency at or about the time of the elections. As you know, Steve Bannon and Todd Blanche have suggested that there will be ICE agents at the polls. I think that that's a virtual certainty. Whether that will include the National Guard or not, we don't know. But anything to intimidate minority voters, particularly immigrant voters, and also I think anything that allows them to, you know, try to seize voting machines, as Trump wanted to do in 2020, but Bill Barr explained to him there was just no basis for it. I think you will see him doing everything he can to try to prevent the peaceful transfer of power, the election of Democrats, and do whatever he can to remain in power and to keep his cronies in powers so that he can continue doing what he thinks he's allowed to do as president, which is anything he wants.
Okay, that's Ty Cobb on PBS, Public Broadcasting Services. And he's, again, he's an attorney who used to work with Donald Trump during his first administration. And he's basically saying, you know, this election speech last week is not about the 2020 election. It's about preparing America for the inevitable involvement of military and police force to make sure the election goes President Trump's way. And again, all the polling, you know, as we've said on the show before, all the polling, all the numbers, even the most recent special elections make it really clear that this is not going to be a good fall election for the president's party. And, you know, that's always the case, right? Whoever is in the White House, Democrat or Republican, the midterm election always goes against that president's party. That's what we need to be thinking about. Trump's election speech, not about 2020, is about preparing us for what he's going to try to do this fall in 2026. And I was interested, fascinated, in fact, to see that my two, the two talking heads on the right that I listen to most frequently, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. Buck Sexton specifically challenging Trump to provide specific data on the allegations he is making. I'm going to play you three separate clips. We're going to start with the one where Buck Sexton questions Trump's claim that China paid U.S. journalists to write bad stuff about Trump leading up to the 2020 election. Here's that clip.
Issue of journalists getting paid,
yeah,
to write stories, getting paid by China to write stories. Okay, who? I want to know who. If you're telling me that there are journalists that received money in order to write negative stories about the... Now, you could say whether that's legal or not. I think it is probably legal, but the point is, all right, if you have this information, let's know this information.
So again, fascinating to me that that question is coming from somebody who's about as far on the political right as they can be. This is Rush Limbaugh's successor, Buck Sexton, saying, okay, you say that the Chinese government has been paying U.S. journalists. Specifics, please. Well, the reason Trump can't give specifics is because there have been multiple investigations, and they've all confirmed that the Chinese government is not doing this. They've also confirmed that the Chinese government does spend a heck of a lot of money on disinformation campaigns. And so does Russia, by the way, and so do we. I don't know, maybe Moldova does as well, who knows? Anyway, researchers at Harvard University, you know, found that the Chinese government turns out about 500,000 social media posts each year, 500,000 social media posts each year, again, trying to disrupt American public opinion. And most of them are generated by government employees. And in other words, they're being paid. People are being paid to put out this material, these 500,000, you know, posts. I was fascinated to learn that there are possibly as many as 2 million people on China's payroll doing this. But the thing is, there's no evidence that a single one of them is a U.S. journalist. Okay? So I fact-checked this a bit further. It is blatantly false. There's no evidence to support the claim that China bribed U.S. journalists to publish negative stories about him in 2020. Again, even independent investigations, other media reports, even the U.S. election security agencies, none of them have found a single incident of an American reporter you can name who's been paid by the Chinese government. And as Buck Sexton points out, okay, it's probably not illegal. It's certainly immoral. It's certainly unpatriotic. But it's not happening. That's the bottom line. And I mean, does China really need to hire U.S. journalists? I'm sure it can pay its own, you know, slave laborers a lot less to do what they're doing from China. Maybe 2 million of them. So, again, here's a quote from Trump during that speech. Quote, "Our elections were left vulnerable to being rigged and stolen, and the trust of the American people was lost." And he provided no evidence, not one example of how a single vote was affected by the alleged U.S. reporters that have been paid by China. You know, and again, to remind you, as Ty Cobb said, what we just heard a little while ago, the former White House attorney for Donald Trump, all this is about preparing to take over the November election. You know, another Trump claim in that speech was, quote, China carried out what is believed to be the largest compromise of election data in history. Again, no evidence. And kudos to Buck Sexton, again, Rush Limbaugh's successor, for calling it out. He said, where's the proof? So there's an entity called the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency in cooperation with the FBI. They put out a bulletin back in 2020 that found no information suggesting any cyber attack on U.S. election infrastructure. Again, that's from them. That's from CBS News. CBS News, actually, I'm not a fan of CBS anymore now that they're basically owned by a buddy of Donald Trump's, but that's from them. Also, again, Georgia and Pennsylvania, they conducted their own audits of the 2024 general election and confirmed the accuracy of election results. I'm going to play another clip from Buck. And this one is not about China. This is about Trump's claim about how many people are registered to vote illegally and how many dead people are registered to vote.
On the issue of the people who are illegals who are registered to vote, or you know, foreigners basically who are registered to vote, are they voting? If they are voting, tell us about the voting. Yeah. If they are voting, why can't we catch them voting? I mean, so this is the thing. He's laid out this information, and a lot of it is, oh my gosh, there are vulnerabilities. Okay, are the vulnerabilities being exploited, though, is the next step. And I need to know if they have that information or not, because that's obviously the most critical thing is whether they're actually acting on this, right? It's one thing to say a lot of people could be voting illegally. Are they voting illegally?
Great question, Buck. Are they voting illegally? I mean, I'm going to give you the answer. No, because if they were, Trump and his team would have cited examples. And I want to get back to that because we don't even, the examples are all against that premise. I want to play you one more clip from Sexton. This is, again, kind of tying those two themes together.
Is anybody going to jail over anything he said last night? Is one single person going to be prosecuted for all of the stuff that he talked about last night? I would say no. I don't think so. And if that's the case, I would want to know why.
Me and Buck Sexton. I mean, I normally don't agree with these guys. And I wonder what Clay Travis is thinking, because he's not jumping on the same bandwagon. Buck does admit later in the program that he's probably just ruined any chance of getting another invitation to the White House. I also wonder whether he's going to run into problems with his employer, because, again, the corporations that own commercial radio are all in lockstep with President Trump. So, wow, Buck calling this out is significant. We'll see where it goes. I want to dig into this stuff a little bit more. You know, Trump also talked about voting machines, calling them vulnerable and easily compromised. And even people within our own government knew that. So again, CBS, one of the big networks that are on board with Trump, thanks to Paramount and Ellison. CBS says, quote, this claim by Trump likely refers to a document declassified by the government that mentions voting machines and Venezuela. The intelligence community found that Venezuela was trying to operationalize a hypothetical vulnerability in a voting system used in that country. That system is not used in the U.S. And Smartmatic, this is a company that makes the Venezuelan machine, is not involved in any voting machines in the U.S. with the exception of Los Angeles County. So in other words, you know, the voting machines being, quote, vulnerable and easily compromised, it's not supported by evidence. Jeff Hale, he's with the Center for Democracy and Technology, writes, security researchers do find real weaknesses embedded in the code and operations of U.S. voting systems, just like they do with power grids, banks, telecommunications, all of which share the same critical infrastructure designation as elections, Finding a flaw and fixing it is a sign of a mature system, not a sign it's broken. And again, you know, we're trying to fix these things. Back to Trump's claim about illegal voters, dead voters, and Buck Sexton's challenge. Okay, show me one. Show me one example of somebody voted illegally, of a dead person voting. If this is happening, somebody is probably going to jail. Who's that? When is that going to happen? What's the charge? So again, Trump claimed, and I'll quote, hundreds of thousands of non-citizens and dead people are listed and active on the voter rolls. So yeah, okay, that's Trump. Election experts, what they say is votes cast on behalf of dead people are extremely rare and the numbers are unlikely to affect the outcome of an election. Okay, so for example, in North Carolina, the State Board of Elections there announced early this year, in April, I believe, that it had identified 34,000 deceased individuals on its voter rolls. But the board also said that this does, quote, does not necessarily indicate that illegal votes were cast in their names. And that's the Sexton's point. Okay, you got all these dead voters. How many of them are actually voting? So, again, from the Center for Election Innovation and Research, the phenomenon of non-citizens voting in the U.S. is a rare occurrence and unlikely to change the outcome of an election. Yeah, so that agency, that entity, the Center for Election Innovation Research, concluded that non-citizens voting in U.S. elections arise from misunderstandings, mischaracterizations, or outright fabrications. And once an investigation by an individual state secretary of state is concluded, quote, the number of alleged instances falls drastically. Okay, so here in Iowa, we have a Republican Secretary of State, and he's pretty much on board with the Republican Party and Trump. He published in March of last year, the state had estimated that there were 2,186 non-citizens registered to vote. But then, after a statewide audit, the number dropped to 277 confirmed non-citizens. So his original estimate of 2,100 was really only 277. And of those 277, you want to guess how many voted in 2024? 35. And again, you know, back to the Center for Election Innovation, probably because of misunderstandings, mischaracterizations, or who knows what. So, you know, Trump also took on mail-in ballots in his speech, right? Even though he's voted by mail not that long ago, when he was in town, he still voted by mail. But he's claimed that mail-in ballots are inherently corrupt. Again, there's no evidence of widespread mail-in ballot fraud or any kind of corruption at all in states where they're used. So another entity, the Brookings Institute, did a little research here and found that, quote, an average total mail voting fraud percentage across the 2016, 18, 2020, and 22 general elections was only 0.00043%. Let me say that number again. Mail-in voting fraud across the last four elections, presidential and midterm, 0.00043%. So how much is that? Well, that's about four instances of voter fraud, mail-in voter fraud, for every 10 million votes. I mean, that's not even a rounding error. That's so small. We don't have a problem here. We don't have a problem. Again, we should always be paying attention. And I'm, you know, I'm the first to admit that there will be people on both sides of the political aisle who try to do things that are nefarious, underhanded, fraudulent. I'm thinking of the 2016 election and Bernie Sanders. I'm thinking of my very first election in 1992. No fraud in my race, which I won really handily. But there was fraud in another race that was very close. And I've talked about that before. I'm not going to get into that one today. I got to play one more clip from you, though. After Clay and Buck discussed the Trump election speech, later in that program, they had Stephen Miller on. Again, Stephen Miller, right-hand man, probably the brains behind Trump's agenda. They had him. This is actually not on Clay and Buck show. This clip is from somewhere else. It's kind of all over the place. But it's what he has to say about, quote, left-wing terrorism. I want to play that for you. It's very disturbing.
We have taken the necessary and essential action of formally recognizing left-wing violence as a form of political terrorism that is a direct threat to our national security and the survival of our Republican form of government. That directs, for the first time in American history, all of our law enforcement and intelligence agencies to work together to disrupt, identify, defund, debank, arrest, and prosecute these political terrorists that are operating in our country. It's very important to understand that left-wing political terrorism seeks as its ultimate end the overthrow of our system and form of government. Left-wing terrorism always ends in bloodshed, misery, and suffering. It only can travel in one direction. There's no point at which the left-wing terrorist is satisfied with his gains and ceases progressing. Inevitably, left to run its course, it always becomes a gulag. It always becomes the mass imprisonment of political enemies, the stripping of their rights and freedoms, inflicting immense pain, humiliation, suffering. It's not a coincidence that when you look at these violent Antifa demonstrations, you see any photograph of those who were assembled. To be blunt, not one of the people that is demonstrating looks like a normal person. Not one looks normal. They're all deformed in some way in their appearance, in their dress, in their mannerism.
Wow, that's the guy who's basically in charge of the White House and in charge of domestic policy and who knows what kind of influence he has on foreign policy. He's going to enter this conversation later when we talk about climate change too. But how frightening is that? And terrorism? Left-wing terrorism? What about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 4 years ago? I mean, come on. Gulag, well, okay, what about deportation camps? Some of these are horrible places. And, you know, so I'm hoping that reasonable people can hear what Steve Miller has to say and think, this guy is dangerous. If this guy is not a dyed-in-the-wool fascist, I don't even know what fascist means anymore. I mean, that speech could have been straight out of Goebbels or someone in Adolf Hitler's regime. The people who are involved with the left-wing terrorist protests, they're weird. They're not normal. They're clearly wrong. What they have tattoos. They have a body piercing. They have a different color hair. I don't know what he means by that. It doesn't matter what he means because what he's doing is trying to poison the minds of enough Americans to accept that there is truth in what he's saying, that there is such a thing as left-wing terrorism. Watch out with this guy, folks. And if you voted for Trump, I'd really like to know how you feel about what Stephen Miller just said. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. Last week, I had Rick Stewart on this program. He's a Libertarian candidate for Congress here in Iowa. And the Republican Party in Iowa and nationally worked to get three Libertarians thrown off the ballot here in Iowa because they're afraid that Libertarians are going to take votes from Republicans. So I had Rick on to talk about that. He's the one of the three that did not get bounced. And one thing that happened in his case was the U.S. Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon called for an investigation into RFK Jr. because RFK Jr. called both Stewart and one of the other candidates and encouraged them to get off the ballot and even said to one of them, so, hey, get off the ballot. I'll be your advocate. I'll help you get involved with this administration. To Rick's credit, he said, no way. I'm not going to be bullied. And to Wyden's, credit, he's filing a complaint about this, accusing Kennedy of violating what's called the Hatch Act. That's a 1939 law, goes way back, that limits the type of political activities that federal officials can do, federal employees can do. So I don't know. I'm actually surprised that Wyden's lawsuit doesn't get into the fact that Kennedy offered Stewart something valuable in exchange for dropping out. That happened to me, folks, back in 2008. When I challenged Leonard Boswell, a Democrat, Democratic congressman, one of his aides came to me and said, hey, get out. and we'll give you a job with our staff, $80,000 a year job. I said no. When I went public with that information, Boswell sued me, and then of course because it was a baseless lawsuit, he withdrew it. But yeah, this stuff happens. This stuff happens, and kudos to Wyden for challenging it. I hope he actually focuses on the even more egregious offense, in my opinion, of the benefit being offered to Rick Stewart if he should comply with the White House's request. Right, one more political thing to talk about, the Maine Senate seat. Let me play you a clip about that.
At this point, you hadn't vetted Graham Plattner. You hadn't done a full scrub of who he is. How did you go about vetting him? And why did you?
We paid a nice firm a whole chunk of money and got some stuff back. Some of what you've seen on the news we got back. Other stuff we didn't.
Did the vetting process turn up the tattoo that became so controversial?
No.
The Reddit posts, did that turn up in the vetting process?
The firm sent us a thing, and it had some of the posts, but it didn't have all of them.
And what did you think about that? How did you think your way through the fact that he had posted these things on social media?
I said none of this will or should stop him from becoming a U.S. senator.
And what was your thinking there?
I think if what the voters wanted were people who were grown in vats and had never done or said anything that they might regret their entire lives, we'd have a very different country. Part of our thesis here is that people do not want their candidates grown in vats. They want people who are real human beings, and they want people who do not look and sound like the vat-grown people who've been leading this country off a cliff for the last century.
Okay, so maybe that was also painful to listen to for different reasons. That was Dan Moroff. I just got to know who Dan Moroff was last year, maybe the year before. He recruited Dan Osborne, U.S. Senate candidate in Nebraska, who did fairly well. He lost, but did fairly well. And I don't know where else Moroff has been active, but I know he was active in Iowa. He recruited a guy named Nathan Sage. And pretty much everybody I know who's been involved with politics in Iowa thought, who is this guy coming in and selecting a Senate candidate? I mean, we hate it when Chuck Schumer does that. And he's done that. And they usually lose. Actually, they almost always lose. They usually win the nomination because of all the money Schumer's war machine throws at them, and then they lose gloriously in the general election, whether it's U.S. Senate, U.S. House. So here's another guy. This guy is from the other spectrum, other side of the political spectrum within the Democratic Party. He's a self-described socialist. Interestingly, he's also the grandson of the Toys R Us people. I assume that comes with a lot of money. I assume that's why when Nathan Sage kind of came from nowhere and was announced as a candidate for U.S. Senate here in Iowa, he had like $800,000 all of a sudden. And then he later dropped out. He dropped out because he was getting zero traction. So this is the guy, Dan Moroff, who recruited Graham Plattner in Maine. And you heard the interview. I mean, I can't believe that Moroff agreed to do that interview because it is so embarrassing. I mean, first of all, if you've got that much vocal fry going on and it sounds like you're still, you know, maybe still struggling to gain your adult voice, maybe you shouldn't be doing interviews. And maybe that's a little bit bigoted on my part, but it was embarrassing to hear him talk. And again, content, sure, as well. Okay, we didn't catch the tattoo. We didn't catch the Reddit post. We dropped all this money. We got some stuff back. We didn't get a lot back. Basically, they did an incredibly poor job at vetting this candidate. And so, should there be no doubt that the wheels fell off the Plattner campaign? I guess it's incredible to me. Bottom line is, I don't care whether you're Chuck Schumer with the corporate wing of the Democratic Party or you're with the DSA wing of the Democratic Party, stay out of individual state's political business. You have no reason to be involved with recruiting candidates, with throwing money at them. Just stay away. Let people, let voters in those particular districts figure out who they want to run and figure out who they want to support. All right. Hey, okay. Hey, I got to take a short break, folks. Back in a minute. And a reminder that underwriting for this program provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. More information at 515-229-5085.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you, folks. We're broadcasting from Des Moines, Iowa. Underwriting for the Fallon Forum provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. I want to talk briefly about the lawsuit that President Trump filed last year against Ann Seltzer, a very respected, prominent pollster in Iowa and beyond. The lawsuit was filed against her and against the Des Moines Register for publishing a poll that suggested that Kamala Harris was going to win Iowa. In the poll, she won by 3 percentage points. In reality, she lost by 13. What was really surprising about that was that Ann Seltzer is rarely wrong and never wrong by that much. So everybody was kind of shocked by it. And I know Ann Seltzer. She's a very decent person. And so a lot of us in Iowa were like, come on, Trump, this is not a legitimate lawsuit. And apparently that's how the courts came down on it as well. They dismissed, the Polk County District Court judge heard oral arguments and on the motions to dismiss. And it's not going anywhere. It's one of these lawsuits intended to sow intimidation and to get people to shut up. All right, so here in Des Moines today, it is 97 degrees. A lot of parts of the country are experiencing extreme drought, heat, and of course, along with that, floods. And interestingly, according to a survey published in The Guardian, a majority of Americans are connecting the severe weather to the climate crisis. Despite efforts by Trump to dismiss global warming as a hoax or a con job, so, again, according to The Guardian, this is a sign that attempts to suppress and polarize climate concerns may not be seeing full success, is one way to put it. So about 61% of likely American voters believe extreme weather events have become more frequent over the past years. Now, that survey, it was from a polling firm called Data for Progress. It found that 72% of Democrats believe that extreme weather is being caused by climate change. I'm surprised it's only 72%. 63% of independents and about 46% of all Republicans. So, it's an overwhelming majority that understand what's going on. My thought is it took people long enough to get here. And we still got a ways to go. Again, there's a very powerful denial machine that is now headquartered in the White House. I'll talk about that in a minute, too. But first, a story in The Economist. I read all kinds of newspapers, listen to all kinds of radio programs. The Economist is kind of the British apologist for crony capitalism, in my opinion. But they did have an interesting story on July 6th, talking about something called the albedo. A-L-B-E-D-O, not libido, folks, albedo. And this is where climate change basically feeds on itself. It's the warming effects, the greenhouse gases that, you know, because the sun can't bounce back from the earth like it used to be able to do. There's less snow, there's less white surfaces available for the sunlight to take a trip back to the sun. And as a result of these high albedos, you know, there's more energy, more sun energy staying on the planet, and thus further raising the planet's temperature. Ouch, this is a problem. So here's a problem as well. Last year, and this is just coming out now, somehow a couple New York Times reporters managed to get into this situation. I don't know if they were at the meeting or talked to people who were, but there was a meeting at the White House between oil company executives and Trump and his key people. One oil executive was complaining about bills that had passed the Vermont and New York legislatures that were trying to address the need to clean up Superfund sites that were related to climate change. And to ease the grief of these poor oil executives, Stephen Miller, yeah, him again, told the group that he'd fix the problem. So, you know, give Miller credit for keeping his word, because 2 months later, after that meeting, the Trump administration sued Vermont and New York to try to block enforcement of those laws. Maybe some of you remember the MAGA's predecessor, the Tea Party. They were all about states' rights. Don't let the federal government boss us around. Don't let states boss cities around, counties around. Local control, right? Well, there's another example of how the federal government is basically taking over what should be the state's responsibility. So also from that meeting at the White House, Darren Woods, he's the head honcho of Exxon, he expressed his concern about European Union regulations that require big corporations to both monitor and reduce the environmental effect of their activities, and also they have to develop climate transition plans. So Woods didn't like that. And of course, Stephen Miller didn't like that. So Trump told Howard Lutnick, that's the Commerce Secretary, he said, go ahead and impose additional tariffs on the EU until they abandon those regulations. Done. And I'm not sure what came of those regulations, but I mean, this is how friendly the White House is to the oil industry. So at another point in that meeting, Miller asked the executives in attendance for a list of 10 projects the White House could help fast track. The CEO of Chevron, Mike Wirth, he pushed for an extension of the firm's license to operate in Venezuela. Well, we see where that led. Venezuela, now run by Marco Rubio. So according to the article in the New York Times about this, the CEOs were almost in awe. There was no semblance of a policy process, but rather the CEOs are raising their grievances and Trump was essentially saying, make it so, it shall be done. Yeah, anyway, this is where we're at, folks. The oil industry basically owns the White House. Hey, I got to take a short break. Back in a minute. When we come back, we'll be talking about loneliness, among other things. But a quick reminder that underwriting for the Fallon Forum is provided by Western Optometry. More information at 515-789-3055. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers. Formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit circleofpeacemakers.com. At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon here, folks. Hey, I'm underwriting for this program provided by Architecture by Synthesis. More at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so AI will become conscious if it's not already. That means 2001 Space Odyssey is probably right. I mean, HAL, if you've seen the movie HAL, the computer, you know, he basically says, Dave, no, I can't do that. HAL becomes concerned about its own well-being, its own ability to continue as a, quote, life form or whatever it is. So just earlier this year, Anthropic, who is, I think, Anthropic is probably one of the more responsible, socially responsible AI companies, at least they're trying to do the right thing, maybe. Their CEO, Dario Amodei, he said that his company, at least he was honest, he said his company could not rule out the possibility that Claude, that's Anthropic's chatbot, they could not rule out the possibility that Claude was conscious. And when Claude itself was asked to estimate the probability that its well-being matters in its own right, it gave numbers ranging from 5% to 40%. A story in The Guardian about this said, quote, in building ever more advanced AI, we may be creating a new type of being, and this could be the most consequential thing our species has ever done, and yet we have essentially no plan for how to navigate this process ethically. And that, by any reckoning, is insane. Okay. Again, the robots. They're going to be able to think and act. Okay. And we need Congress and the entire, you know, collection of nations to come together and figure out how to control this stuff. All right, real briefly, and I got to give you, because I've always been a longtime enemy of corporate welfare. When I was a legislator, that was a big thing I worked on. Got me in all kinds of trouble with our Democratic governor. here's another example of why corporate welfare is a dumb idea. There's a pet food plant in Independence, Iowa, and it's going to lay off 41 people, and that's going to happen less than 3 years after the state gave it $1.5 million to create 229 jobs. This is Independence Premium Foods, not locally owned. It's owned by an LLC out of New Jersey. They promised to create all these jobs. They're not doing it. What do they do? What is Premium Foods? That sounds good, right? No. Well, maybe. They make, I love this, human-grade dog food. Okay, so I guess if things get really, really rough, folks, if times get really hard, and that's all you got, you can eat your dog's food if you get it from Independence Premium Foods. Okay, so the Iowa Economic Development Authority, who gave out this $1.5 million, was asked whether the company would have to refund some of the assistance, and they did not reply. All right, one more short deal here before I get into loneliness. Israel continues to flout international law. So just recently, Israel's defense and finance ministers announced plans for 3 illegal settlements in Gaza and the West Bank. I mean, they're constructing these knowing that they're illegal. They've been called illegal by everybody, and yet they continue to do them. So the thinking there is that with the national elections coming up on October 27th in Israel, Netanyahu's coalition is racing to expand control of as much of Gaza and the West Bank and probably Lebanon and part of Syria as well before the election. I don't know how anybody can stand in support of the Israeli government anymore. So, loneliness. And maybe people know this, but isolation, loneliness, it's on the rise in the U.S. Good story in Axios about this. Americans are spending less time hanging out than they did 20 years ago. And that trend is cross-generational. There's some interesting new data from the American Time Use Survey. And in that survey, the average time spent socializing per day has fallen from 45 minutes to 35 minutes over the last 20 years. I can't believe it's as low as 45 minutes. I absolutely tell you, folks, I spend a lot more time than 45 minutes a day socializing. I mean, some of that is work-related, too, but I'm also involved with music every week, with bocce ball, with a table of people that sit around and speak French, and square dancing. I mean, I do all these things, and I have a hard time imagining that it's any less than several hours a day, really, between that and actual work-related socializing. So the decline, and this is not surprising to me, the decline is steepest among young people. So the 15 to 24-year-olds, they went from spending an hour a day to around 35 minutes. Sociologists and psychologists are pointing to several trends. Smartphones, people interacting through screens instead of face-to-face. I mean, I have next-door neighbors. And actually, we have a good rapport, but I'm inclined just to go knock on the door and say, hey, what about this? But I know it's more common these days just to send a text message about that. That's not such a big deal, I guess. But again, there are people who basically live that way. Text messaging, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, that's how they communicate. It's not just young people either, but again, it is worse among young people. And maybe this is why we're seeing so much desperation among that generation. Maybe it's why when I walk down the street and try to acknowledge somebody who's passing by, I get no response. They look straight ahead. Even when I say hi or wave, they don't respond. It's just not a comfortable position for them to be in. They're not used to having to respond to people in the flesh. So this is disturbing, deeply disturbing, to me, very, very disturbing. So there was a 2025 report that researchers found widespread closures of all kinds of hangout spots, from libraries to coffee shops to museums. And so that's a part of the problem as well. So I guess you have to go out and make this stuff happen in your life. And again, it's a real thing. We are not meant to be isolated. We're not meant to live in little pods. We're not meant to communicate with each other only through screens. Hey, I got to take a short break. When we come back, Kathy's going to join me to talk about the cyclospora outbreak. First, though, a reminder that underwriting for this program provided by Dr. Kim Holding with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, underwriting for the program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, and everybody who doesn't have cyclosporiasis, raise your hand. We are not raising our hands, but...
I'm raising my hand. I don't have it.
Or we're raising our hands because we don't have it. Some of our friends do.
We do have friends who have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, friends really shouldn't let friends eat iceberg lettuce, in my opinion. But well, so yeah, what do you got on this, Kathy?
Well, let's just review quickly what's happening with the outbreak as of today's recording, which is July 20th, and then talk about the entity that was initially linked to the outbreak, that is Taylor Farms. Formerly, they go by Taylor Fresh Foods Incorporated. That's a really huge company that packages and sells food to a lot of grocery stores, fast food chains, and that kind of place.
Yeah.
Right now, the CDC has, as of July 14th, was the most recent update they had on the site, 1,645 reported confirmed cases, and then more than 1,500 more cases that were needing confirmation. And the word is that the heat-loving parasite spreads through feces, of course. People have been infected by consuming fruits or vegetables that have been exposed to feces-contaminated irrigation.
Can I just throw the word gross in here?
It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross. Yeah. Yep.
So the signs in restaurant bathrooms that say employees must wash their hands. It's good to see those.
That's right.
we want to see those. We want to see people
comply.
It's
good to wash your vegetables, too, unless you know exactly where they came from. Also, the Harvard Public School or School of Public Health is indicating that outbreaks are not uncommon. The recent one, though, is uncommonly large.
Well, and that's because the food system that's distributing the lettuce is widespread.
It's huge.
It's all over the country.
Ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And also, there are probably many, many more cases, but a lot of people don't get tested when they have the main symptom, which is diarrhea.
Mm.
So, there was this supposed initial outbreak.
Yeah.
In Taylor Farms, the Mexico center that processes and packages salads, other foods. And yesterday, though, the news on NBC reported that the Food and Drug Administration had retested the sample of lettuce from Taylor Farms of Mexico, and they decided it was a false positive. That's a little weird.
So what does that mean?
That means initially they had linked Taylor Farms with the outbreak, and now they're withdrawing that link. However, Taylor Farms has not withdrawn their recall of the lettuce products that came from, that were packaged, processed and packaged at
So Taylor, quote, farms. I mean, is it actually a farm?
It's, it was started as a farm many, many years ago.
By Mr. and Mrs. Taylor, presumably.
A couple. This farm now grows about 25% of their produce in-house, but the rest comes from what they call more than 280 family farms. And I'm going to give you a quick example of what they call a family farm. One of those farms that they acquired in 2019 is called Earthbound Farm in California, and they started up in 1984. On 2.5 acres owned by a couple. It was an organic farm. By the early 2000s, they had begun to be acquired by bigger and bigger companies. Today, they operate more than 50,000 acres, and they contract with at least 150 independent growers. So if you think about Taylor Farms saying 280 family farms, that means one of the, quote, farms under them has a whole bunch of other farms.
So yeah, it's a web. There's farms that are contracting with farms that are selling to Taylor Farms. And again, this one farm you're talking about started on 2.5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that wasn't working very well, so they expanded to 50,000 acres. 50,000 acres. That's not a farm. That's an industrial operation.
Well, the long story short is while we don't know for sure if Taylor Farms was connected with the initial outbreak. Let's just do a quick review of their records. May 2011, they recalled salad mixed with grape tomatoes from Florida growers in 2011. They recalled a salad blend in 2012. Their New Jersey Processing Center voluntarily removed mangoes and other fruits from products supplied to a convenience store in four states in 2013. They recalled organic baby spinach for E. coli. One. In 2013, they recalled broccoli salad kits because of the salad dressing that was sold in the little tiny packets. In 2014, raw onions from McDonald's sites because of the E. coli outbreak. And again in 2025, they made a $1 million donation to Make America Great Again, Inc., less than 1 week after the FDA announced it was delaying implementation of the food traceability rule.
Wow, no conflict of interest there. My gosh.
Something to think about.
So yeah, eat local, folks.
Eat local.
Buy local, grow your own, support your local farmers. Thanks, Kathy.
You bet.
Hey, thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Denneman, Charles Goldman, and Kathy Burns. Also, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and Real Estate Agent Joe Henry. Also, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. This is Ed Fallon, folks, host of the Fallon Forum. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.